Now, in Ohio, you got me as an actuary, and other states have actuaries, but there are only 40 or so regulatory actuaries in states, and some states have more than one. So that means that not every state out there, in fact, a lot of states, don't have actuaries. Now what they do is many of them will hire consultants. There may be an actuary involved in this. They may actually hire a consultant to review your filing if you send in a rating plan that's developed through predictive models. But you've got to think about, how is that actuary, I'm putting this in front of, going to explain this to the next person? Many of the filings I look at have to go in front of the director. I've got to explain to her what a company is doing. And if you look at the law says this, essentially the superintendent has the power to disapprove filings. It doesn't say that actuary she's hired up in the corner of the third floor has the power to disapprove or approve. It's the superintendent. And so you've got to think in terms of that the regulator is somebody who needs you to explain what you're doing, and to give, you've got to give the regulator words that can be used to other audiences, the legislators, consumers, governors. This is what this plan does. And one other thing for the future is, I think we've got to consider what I call new regulatory paradigms. An example I have here is greater reliance on actuarial opinions. Can you, as an actuary, write an opinion on your rates, submit an opinion with your rates, and say, I'm submitting this filing. It's my opinion that these rates comply with the law in state X and are actuarially sound. I've developed them in compliance with the following standards of practice. Could you defend a rate filing in the same way that a loss reserve opinion is defended? And can we bring the reliance of actuarial opinions on rates to the same level of importance, maybe not the same legal importance or the same legal necessity as we have in for reserves, but can we bring them the same level of importance and get regulators to rely on the statement of an actuary? To sum up, I would ask all of you to look at my last these three items here, and think in terms of where are you going with predictive models, as the predictive models determine prices for consumers, remember that consumers contact the regulators and their legislators when they see problems. And legislators write those laws that we all come to, cherish, to one degree or another. As the results of these models affect consumers, you're going to hear, you may see you guys may see the results in laws and in regulation. So a key thing, I think, is to explain how your model is actually an improvement. And give the regulator reasons to approve your filing. I have a saying that I tell my staff is that whenever we review a filing, we go into a filing with the predisposition that we are ready to approve it. Just give me enough reasons to say yes. But when I see when I find reasons that I'm not quite sure about, or reasons to say no, I'm going to ask questions. So give us the information we can use to explain what you're doing, and to demonstrate that your rating plan is actually sound. And that's all I have for now. Question?
Yes. It's not really about predictive modeling. It's about what you said about the Ohio law. Did you say the commissioner, superintendent, whatever it is?
Yeah. No. Well, the law says that the superintendent has the power to ask for support. If the superintendent cannot determine that the rates comply with the requirements, in other words, the superintendent can't determine that your rates are not excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory, then the superintendent can ask for more information. And if the superintendent, I'll tell you how it works in Ohio, if the superintendent doesn't like what you're doing, the superintendent can disapprove your filing.
Even if your disapprove an actually sound filing?
Well, she could, but that's not the end of the story. I'll give you the short version is that we can disapprove a filing. A company can take us to hearing. We have a right to take us to a hearing and challenge that determination. Once you've gone through that administrative procedure of defending your filing, if you don't like the outcome at that point, then you can go to the courts. So it's not unfettered power of regulation. It's in practice, the commissioner in Ohio and the commissioners in many states depend on their actuaries to come to them and say, this company's rates are actuarially sound. And put another way is this is something that usually gets a superintendent to say, okay, you can approve it. And that is when I say, if they take us to hearing, we will lose. We don't like to fight battles, we'll lose. So yes, it sounds like we have this unfettered ability to just say yes, no to things, but that's not actually the case. There's administrative and legal ramifications to things we do.
I guess where I was going with that is that if the constraint is that whatever actuarial modeling or GLM or predictive modeling that company wants to use to set rates, if it can't easily be explained, translated into layman's terms, then the commissioner has a right to turn it down. Somehow it seems that in this day, I mean, that is it's an unfortunate state of affairs. I think the underside of what you were saying, though, is that in practice, there are ways through this thicket, but these models are very complicated, and mm-hmm. it's very difficult to boil them down into things that, if you're not trained, it will be readily understandable. I mean, it does seem to be an inevitable part of it.
Well, perhaps simplifying it, or the idea of that you should simplify the models is not really the correct message. Maybe I've misstated that. But it's not so much simplifying it. It's give us the information that shows that it's actuarially sound. So, for instance, perhaps show us some of the results of your test for goodness of fit, and test on individual variables to show that this variable, like for instance, credit score. Here's a separate analysis on credit score that shows that, like in that company, we have 12 different categories, and the factors, the difference in costs as we segment our book of business along these 12 categories, you can see the difference in loss experience. But I think for the future of these models, methods of reviewing the goodness of fit may be part of the process and part of the solution for reaching a regulatory acceptance, because they're very complex, and you're right. If you boil them down to simple things, if we do one-way analyses and all the different factors, that's helpful, but it doesn't tell you everything. It doesn't tell you how those factors work with each other. I don't mean to imply that it should be simplified. What I mean is that give us information that is direct, is written in relatively plain English. For instance, if you provide some sort of goodness of fit test, tell us what the test is and what the different values of that test mean. Does this numerical result from this test mean that it's a good fit or it's a bad fit? And put it in terms that that can be explained to folks beyond actuaries. Or another way of thinking of it is, think in terms of, you got an actuary, for instance, in Ohio, who is not quite up to speed on all those statistical models and tests and could use a little bit of a quick refresher right there in the filing. Because that's part of the message that, and how do you go to your senior management and say, look, this model works? And I said, how do we know? You've got to have the similar information. We're not asking for the same exhibits. It's internal management information, but it's that same approach. How do you explain to those folks, the underwriters, the agents, how your modeling actually improves the process and actually does price properly?
Can't you look at your, I mean,
You're probably right. I don't think that company wanted to tell us where their book of business fell on that 17,000 pages. And remember, when you tell us, you're telling the world. You're not just telling us. When it becomes a public record, what you're really doing is you're telling all your competitors. We have we call our public records room, and people come in every day to look at filings. I'd say 95% of those folks are representatives of insurance companies coming to see what the other guy is doing. So that's why a company like that is putting a model on the record, or at least trying to support the results of the model, may be reluctant to give us a distribution and that type of analysis. Some may do it though. Yes.
If someone came and asked for the 19,000 pages of supporting documents, how would they physically take this out of your records?
Well, I believe that there are 10 reams of paper in a big box. We have what are usually considered high-speed printers, but when you get into this many pages, it's 10 cents. 10 cents. Yes, question in the back.
Yeah, not all states are the same, and there are some states that have somewhat maverick views on things, damn the torpedoes posting ahead, and they're plotting their own political agenda. Is there anything going on in the AIC to try to create some sort of level playing field among states as far as trying to get those people to come in line and get away from their politics?
Hmm. I'm not sure I have an answer to that question. No, I have an answer to a parallel question. That is, we are trying. The NAIC does have a lot of efforts to make the process of filing stuff with us uniform, and also access to the requirements of states in some sort of uniform location. So, if you've hooked up to the system for electronic rate and form filing, SERF. You're able to file stuff with all the states who I think every state accepts PNC filings in SERF now. The heart of your question, though, is how do I get all those other states to be as great as Ohio? And, we try to lead by example, but those other states don't think we are leading. Some of them think we are going the wrong direction, and I think you're all aware of the issues of there are pushes for federal regulation, a federal role, I should say, of some sort. But I think the questions about these models, whether it's done at a state level or if for instance, the Department of Housing and Urban Development were to review your homeowner's rating plan someday in the future, the same sorts of questions may arise. I understand that the headaches and the difficulties of dealing with 51 different states, and there are efforts to try to make that smoother, but it's a long way off at this point to have total uniformity or some reasonable facsimile of uniformity. More questions? Yes.
Say it's probably both, although I mean it depends a little bit on who you're comparing it to, but in general if you take some of the more sophisticated or complicated U.S. models, they appear to be a lot more complicated than the U.K. models. So, and there's part of me that says that there's certain companies that, and maybe John was alluding to it a little bit too, that put a lot of stuff in their model because they know it may be public. So they don't want it to be real, real obvious what they're really, truly doing. So they throw in junk, if you will.
They throw junk at us?
I think so.
I know I did hear some comments once in a hall about what they wanted to throw at John. I told him you were a nice guy.
Okay, thanks. Sorry. Yeah. Well, of course, before anybody leaves today, I'm going to want to have a list of all the companies you work for so I can check into things. Yes, question there. Well, I think you're right that we do need to focus more on the market, but there are some problems with that, and that is the law is dealing with changes in the law, and the law in Ohio and in many states is set up the way it is today that you file a product with us at some point in time either before it goes effective or no later than the day it goes effective, and essentially we review products. As they enter the market, but there are also avenues, I think, for exploring, for taking a different approach to this. And some states have addressed this. Some states, especially in commercial lines, have said, we don't need to go through the details of every commercial line's rate filing. We're just going to let that market function. And unless we learn otherwise that there's a problem, we're going to assume that market forces result in rates that meet the requirements in the law. That is possible. And some states have done that, but you can tell that with the requirements in a law here where you must file things, you must support them, and they've got to be, rates have to be adequate, not excessive, not unfairly discriminatory, that there's a lot of room for individual commissioners and states to take a different spin on that. So I think in the long term, as I mentioned in my previous slide to this, that can actuarial opinions take on a greater role? Could we possibly, instead of reviewing rates at the as products as they enter the market, should we actually be reviewing the rate-making process in some sort of examination type of role, like we do when we have market regulation exams, to see are you obeying our cancellation statutes properly? Are you rating policies based on the manual you filed with us? Some of the information in those exams does remain confidential. One of the things I wanted to mention, what this just reminds me of, that we have this law that says you file things with us and they become a public record, but most states have a separate law on the powers of the superintendent to examine companies. And in those powers, we examine the financial exhibits from companies, we examine the actuarial opinions, and we do our market conduct exams all under those statutes that have some confidentiality provisions. And I think that may be an avenue for the future of rate regulation, that maybe we shouldn't be regulating the minute details as they go into the market, but we should be regulating the process. And one last thought on that is, as I said earlier on, it looks like you got to file everything, but I said there's something you don't have to file. What you're filing with this are the actual rates, the output, the final result of these models, you're not necessarily getting approval of the model, right? And we get this quite a bit, that a company will say, you approved our credit scoring model last time. And the answer is, I didn't approve the credit scoring model. We approved the rates that you filed with us. And your support on the credit scoring, the information provided on the credit scoring model was support for that. But maybe we should move to looking at your process and looking at the controls in place to make sure that the rates you're developing internally are the ones that are hitting the market. There are a lot of avenues, I think, for making the regulatory process smoother, more uniform, and for letting more of the powers of the market regulate rates. More questions? Well, thank you very much.